Texas Talking Ah. What was that that you said? Texas Talking Ah. Gonna hoop upside your head. Texas Talking Ah. Tell me who can you trust when Texas guys are in Texas guys love.
Welcome to the Tribcast. This is Joe Desotel, not to be confused with the Honorable State Representative Joe Desotel. You may have seen us both on Twitter, but you can tell us apart in person, because I'm taller, thinner, and always to the left.
Thanks, son. This is State Representative Joe Desotel, and I've been waiting to hear my name on the Tribcast for a long time. Sometimes, if you want something done, you just have to do it yourself. So on behalf of the Joe Desoteles everywhere, enjoy this Tribcast, and here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you, Joe Desotels. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the second week of February. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
We could do this like the old What's My Line where you say, I'm Joe Desotels, and if you try to figure out which is the real one. So I'm Joe Desotels. Go.
I'm Joe Desotels.
Are you going to explain how the old What's My Line worked?
No.
Leave some of us at a loss.
That's why they made YouTube, so you can catch up.
Actually, I have watched that on YouTube. It is a good way to spend your work hours. Who else do we have? Editor Emily Ramshaw?
I'm Joe Desotels.
And reporter Morgan Smith.
Hello. I'm not Joe Desotels.
We're going to talk about all sorts of people that are not Joe Desotels today. In keeping with our years of tradition, I guess.
Apparently.
Shall we start with Ted Nugent, famous rocker, ally of Republican gubernatorial candidate Greg Abbott?
Yeah, so this is kind of a test of everybody's tolerances, right? It's like if I like Ted Nugent, this works. If I don't like Ted Nugent, this doesn't work. And Greg Abbott's betting that more of the people that are with him will like Ted Nugent than don't.
I mean, let's remember that this is primary season, right? I mean, who's really going to be thinking about Ted Nugent when the race is the real race in November?
But it's also odd because Greg Abbott doesn't have a primary opponent, so...
Well, he does.
Right. Well,
what? Give your number to.
Yeah, sorry. I don't want to get an angry phone call. But he doesn't have true competition in the primary. So he has to. I mean, what is the benefit to him in being seen with a polarizing figure, even if it does activate some of his supporters?
We should back up and say exactly what's going on. Right. Abbott appeared with Ted Nugent at an event.
A couple of events.
In Denton and in Wichita Falls, I believe.
I think that's right.
And the Davis campaign.
On Tuesday.
And others sort of made an issue of this, saying that.
Yeah, Wendy Davis, I mean.
Well, it wasn't just Democrats. Lisa Fritsch, who's a Republican candidate, jumped in and said this guy is a misogynist and a bigot.
Yeah, basically that he's sexist, that he's, said all kinds of things about women, that he's dated, confessed to dating really underage women, that he's had terrible things. He's had terrible things to say about Hillary Clinton, about Barack Obama, things that basically are flat out racist.
About a month ago, he called President Obama a subhuman mongrel. Stuff like that.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Really
Greg Abbott is betting here that the positive associations are going to outweigh the negative associations. And, this is a tough bet. I don't know that, usually politicians are a little more circumspect than this and a little more careful than this. And, this is a radioactive guy. He's, now you may be right that, this works in a primary and that everybody will have forgotten about it by November, but I think it's a risky bet.
But Morgan's right, though, that he doesn't need to be boosted in this race by anyone.
I mean,
anyone,
unless he's just trying to get in good with the grassroots now. I mean, unless he's really started the November campaign already, which he clearly has. He came out with what looked to be his first attack ad of the governor's race today, Wednesday.
Right.
It does not look like he's going quietly into the primary and is then really going to pick up speed afterward. He's in full-fledged campaign mode.
But what the grassroots that he's going to get in good with by going around with Ted Nugent, are those really grassroots people that are going to go over and vote for Wendy Davis instead?
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone sitting there going, well, I was going to vote for Wendy Davis, but
now Ted Nugent's in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that the parallels that the Democrats and Lisa Fritsch and some Republicans are making are really fair. I mean, you know, what Abbott's folks have said is, you know, we're not worried about this other stuff. What we care about is that he's a constitutional conservative. He's a great defender of the Constitution.
And they mean he's a gun enthusiast. He's very pro Second Amendment.
Yeah, right. You can't right. overlook all the other stuff and say, well, boy, you know, I like his take on the Constitution, so everything else that he said that's racist and sexist doesn't matter.
And also, you have some folks asking, you know, well, Greg Abbott has made going after child predators this cornerstone of his time as AG, and, you know, here is Ted Nugent, who has admitted to sleeping with underage girls as an adult. I mean, that just can't be a positive question to have people asking.
It's not your standard family values message. You know, they're looking here for free media, and they got their free media, and they got their pop in the newspapers. But I think that they were, you know, a little ambitious in running for the headlines and for the cameras, and a little, you know, uncautious. Associating with somebody who, you know, this association has negative connotations.
And why give Wendy Davis the fodder right now?
Right.
You know, I mean, the Abbott campaign has done a pretty good job keeping her on the defensive lately. You know, why give her an opportunity to go for the jugular, especially on women's issues?
Right.
And to be fair, I mean, Ted Nugent really can enliven an event, right? I've seen him play
guitar.
He's an attraction.
I mean, we've had
him on the Tribcast to make it more fun.
In the Barnum and Bailey tradition, he's an attraction. He's mm-hmm. something you know. Here's a two-headed frog. Let's go see it.
But I think his issues do speak to exactly sort of the sensitive issues of this race, right? Which is sort of the role of women in Texas.
Right.
He did really toe the line at these events. I mean, he didn't, you know, there wasn't hardly, you know, a word out of place.
It's not what he did at the events. It's,
right.
It's why he was at the events and, you know, why he's an attraction in the first place and all of the things that he's done before that, you know, Greg Abbott wants the positive associations but has to eat the negative ones.
Right. But it's true that Greg Abbott managed to get all the media there and everybody in a tizzy, and then, you know, there was just a couple minutes of Nugent and then it was the Greg Abbott show.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was from getting a media in the room play, it was pretty successful.
Right.
And I guess we won't know at this point if it has long-term ramifications. People are still talking about it or not. In the future.
Well, I'm not even sure it has completely short-term ramifications. I'm not sure anybody's right. paying attention to the races at this point. Well, I mean, this is so early in the game that, you know, but these things stack up over the course of a campaign, and you gather the sticks, and by the time we get to August and September and October, when Davis and Abbott are, you know, in full prosecution of this race, all of these sticks and stones that they've gathered along the way will be, you know, part of the ammunition.
You know, although our sitting governor has been like a close ally and pal of Nugent's for years, and it hasn't, you know, nobody has had a problem, or, you know, it hasn't been enough for like voters to throw him out of office.
You know, that's actually sort of interesting. I mean, not necessarily all of the things that have worked for Rick Perry or that Rick Perry has employed during his statewide political tour that really started in 1990 are going to apply going forward. And not everybody's going to get away with the same sorts of things that he has. Some of the things he couldn't get away with, others will get away with. I mean, it's not necessarily the same game. You can't stay in that playbook all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Nugent earlier was named the treasurer of Sid Miller's campaign, who's running for agriculture commissioner mm-hmm. in the Republican primary. Is he still serving that role?
He's still there, yeah.
But that didn't cause as big a splash. I guess that's just a virtue of if no one's paying attention to the governor's race, very, very few people.
It's a lower profile race. That's another question here. If I'm a low profile candidate and nobody knows my name, I'm Sid Miller, in other words, mm-hmm. how do I get people to know my name? Well, let me hook up with somebody more famous and, you know, we'll...
Has that helped him?
Look at Sid Miller is the kind of guy, you know, you almost expect to see them together. Sid Miller is always in blue jeans. He's always in boots. He's always wearing a hat.
Right.
You know, Greg Abbott is the sort of buttoned up, always in a suit.
Suburban lawyer.
Yeah.
Did you not see his Texas Monthly profile?
Oh, yes. I was.
Cover?
I'm familiar with that profile. That,
right.
Yeah. So
he's always shooting things.
Allegedly. He's shooting things when he's on the cover of Texas Monthly, which is what? Once? How many times has Greg Abbott been on the cover of Texas
Monthly?
Once with
a gun, as far
as I know. 100% of the time.
Right, exactly.
He's been on the cover. He's had a big shot.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts on Ted Nugent then, before we move on to another?
I don't really have many thoughts on Ted
Nugent. No, I mean, this is one of those stories where you just see if this thing has any lasting effect and whether, you know, it has any, whether it moves any voters. Does it get some Democrats to the polls who might not otherwise have gone? Does it turn some independents? Does it turn off some Republicans? I don't know if it's that big of a deal.
Right.
But, you know, it's a thing.
But it is interesting, I think, getting back to Morgan's original point, just the strategy of Abbott when he doesn't really need to go to the right at all to be sort of tacking that way or bring in those, trying to bring in those people, even though it seems unnecessary.
Right.
Speaking of the right, let's talk about the lieutenant governor Republican primary and the latest in that. And for that, we will turn to Morgan Smith.
So Tuesday night, there was a bombshell dropped in the, or what was advertised as a bombshell, and I think is probably fairly accurately characterized as a bombshell.
If it walks like a bombshell and talks like a bombshell.
And it was that State Senator Dan Patrick, who has been probably the most inflammatory in his comments about illegal immigration and border security policy. It came out that he hired an undocumented worker in the 1980s and to work in a chain of his restaurants. And it wasn't just one undocumented worker, though that was the person that was interviewed in this TV clip and also quoted in a Dallas Morning News story.
And but, KTRK from Houston.
Right, the KTRK TV station. But essentially that the Patrick hired this worker and three others, members of his family, to work in his Houston restaurants. And there's no paper evidence of this. Patrick has said every person who I hired in my restaurants filled out the necessary paperwork. I know this because my mother was the bookkeeper.
My mother was a stickler for the rules.
And she's a stickler for rules.
He also said he didn't do the hiring, right?
It's the, yeah. It's the same way, yeah. You know that Jesus loves you.
He said he didn't do the hiring. The person who was interviewed, the former employee, said it's true that Dan Patrick didn't do the hiring, but that Dan Patrick knew he was an illegal immigrant.
And he gave kind of a remarkable amount of details about his time there. He said that he talked about how kind Patrick was to him and how much he was wishing to help him earn get a job so that he could have a better life and work in the United States. He talked about how there was a time when his mother, the worker's mother, was sick in Mexico, and Dan Patrick was trying to find a way to help him go back and visit her, and even offered to
drive him to the border.
Yeah, to drive him to the border. Like, yeah.
Which Patrick denies.
Yeah, Patrick.
Right.
Patrick
has denied all of this.
Patrick said that he did recognize the guy that did this interview with the Dallas Morning News and KTRK, and that he was a nice guy. They sort of both have very nice things to say about each other.
Yeah, that part of it was also interesting to me, because I'm wondering, you know, why not just deny it outright, say I have no idea who this person is, especially when there's no paper trail, but maybe there is more there
this guy's a legitimate character, yeah. You know, who's right. Saying, you know, who can sort of bring up all these specifics about this time. You know, I mean, Jerry Patterson is the one who hired a private eye.
I'm very tickled by that, by the way. Just, you know, Jerry Patterson going out hiring a private
eye.
You
know, a lot of this stuff. I got a thing in the same race from somebody in the same race. I, you know, this is the season of the brown envelopes. Mm-hmm. I got a brown envelope that was from Ross Ramsey to Ross Ramsey. It's like my future.
This
Ross
has
Ramsey.
Been a very exactly. Brown but, envelope
right.
Heavy race.
You take a lot of Ambien, though, right?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah, I was sleeper searching. And
I mean, I think the part that could be most damaging to him, and I think we were talking about this on social media last night a little bit, frankly, is the part about how nice he was to this guy.
No, but the thing is,
Patterson comes in and says, you know, frankly, I did this. Dan Patrick deserves this because he's been saying these things,
right.
And this is rank hypocrisy, et cetera, et cetera. And he just sort of owned the thing, which was unusual. But all of that said, it's a one-source thing. It's like, this guy says this. Dan mm-hmm. Patrick denies some of it, but not all of it. I know the guy. He did work there. There's some question as to whether this was common practice or illegal at the time. You know, it was a different set of laws
well, it
in
didn't,
place.
It didn't become a
Reagan's amnesty.
Right, so it didn't become illegal to hire such workers right. until 1986.
You know, the guy is now a naturalized citizen. I mean, there's a bunch of sort of fuzz around it. As a straight-up political thing, you know, it's not the bombshell that we were hearing it would be, but it does undermine some of Patrick's position, I think.
Yeah, and I think out of all of the candidates, I think if you look at the candidates in the race, Patrick has certainly been the one who has stayed away from adding any kind of nuance to what his stance on border security is. He has had kind of the toughest, most hardline talk on it, even when, you know, they'll all be up on stage, they'll all agree on these essential points of what policy should be, but Patrick has always like he just has the one line of this is, you know, we need to stop the invasion. That this is a huge problem that's threatening our, that's causing more crime. I think there's even a quote from 2006 when he talked about infectious diseases being brought in. And so it's, I think when you look at it in that context, you know, Patrick's own positions now don't allow for this kind of wiggle room. He's set himself up as this very black and white candidate on the issue.
Yeah. If today's Patrick was the opponent of this candidate, Patrick, what would he say about
right,
that?
Exactly. Right, exactly.
But does the actual issue make a big difference? I mean, weren't sort of similar allegations brought up against Mitt Romney, and he still won the Republican nomination for president?
Romney wasn't pounding everybody with immigration stuff the way Patrick is. I mean, that's what raises this up. And in fact, that's what this guy said brought him out. I mean, Patrick did all these things for me, but, you know, I saw the stuff that he's been saying and the things that he's been doing, and that's why I'm talking to Jerry Patterson's private investigator, Ted Olberg, and then Terry Stutz and Bob Garrett over at the Morning News.
So Jerry Patterson's private investigator would be a very good fake Twitter feed.
Yeah, establish that one. So let's say this does have an effect. Does it just have an effect by way of getting somebody else into a runoff, or does this have a positive effect on Dewhurst? Because that, you know, it seems like for the people who really are sort of like rabid, the immigration folks, who this is their key issue, I don't know if this makes them love Jerry Patterson. I mean, maybe it edges them toward Todd Staples in that regard.
To the extent that it takes anybody off of Dan Patrick. You know, what you're really asking is if I came off of Dan Patrick, if I'm for Dan Patrick, people are already voting, right?
Right, yeah.
More than half of them will vote before Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
If people come off of Dan Patrick because of this, where do they go? Do they go to Staples or Dewhurst or Patterson? It's probably a mix.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably good
for everybody?
It's like two steps. The first thing you do is you come off of a candidate and you're kind of free-floating, and then you go to a candidate. So who's advertising? Who looks positive in the next 2 weeks? If I'm shopping.
Right. Right.
So do we have predictions on this one? Does it have an effect?
I think it'll have some effect. It doesn't have an effect just as it stands. Somebody's going to have to turn it into ads and talk to voters about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think if you look at this.
What was your tweet?
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe by the time this Tribcast is out, that
the first attack,
there'll be an attack ad out already about it. But if you look at it just, I mean, this is just like ripe for an attack ad. There, you don't have to include Dan Patrick's response to it. You don't have to in an attack ad. You don't have to include the fact that it was legal at the time to do this in an attack ad. All you have to say is, you know, Dan Patrick may talk a tough game on immigration, but
you don't even
this
have to talk
what
about,
he did.
You don't
right.
have to say how long ago it was. I mean, this is long before Dan Patrick, the politician, right?
Right.
Right.
So, of course, I think probably most restaurant owners would be in similar boats if you did a poll.
Yeah, but most of them aren't running for lieutenant governor.
Right. So we'll see. Are you ready to move on to a sort of, we've talked about the people that are coming up and vying for new things, but one final act of
a secret little election here.
Governor Rick Perry's will be to.
This one's yours, right?
This is mine. So I'm trying to figure out how to.
Ownership.
So transition into a question to myself.
No need to transition. Just talk about it.
I want to see you do this.
So basically, as some of you who listen to the Tribcast each week or read the Tribune might know,
Reeve covers higher education.
The chancellor of the University of Texas system, while I was off on vacation, decided it was a good time to announce his resignation.
That was intentional.
Talk about your timing. That was spectacular. Yeah. That was outstanding.
Well, it's pretty consistent with most of my vacations. So anyway, the search to replace him is supposed to take up to 6 months, but the sort of behind-the-scenes politicking appears to have begun. According to a handful of sources, it sounds like the governor has sent signals that his guy for the job would be Health and Human Services Commissioner Kyle Janik, who was also in the legislature for years.
How long has he been at the Health and Human Services Commission? Not that long.
Since like late 2012?
I guess since Tom Cease.
Right.
Left.
Right.
Yeah.
No, so not long.
Mm-hmm.
But
not that short either. Yeah.
Right.
But the UT system chancellor gig is pretty sweet. Right. So I would imagine I don't think he would be like, oh, well, you know, it hasn't been long enough here at the Health and Human Services Commission.
So
give me a few more years.
Janik's from Galveston. His dad was a longtime county commissioner down there. And he ran for House and then moved up into the Senate and then left for a couple of years to lobby. I guess he was a freelance lobbyist. Did some healthcare stuff, right?
Yeah. Isn't he a doctor also?
And he's an anesthesiologist. Right. He went undergrad, A&M, got his doctor, his actual doctor's degree at UTMB mm-hmm. back on the island. And practicing anesthesiologist and now, you know, Health and Human Services Commissioner.
So he went to undergrad at A&M?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting.
So, I mean, again, this is the Perry play to have yet another Aggie running the... Yeah.
Well, so if you want to attack him, you attack him on this. And if you want to support him, you support him on this. I mean, mm-hmm. it's this sort of, you know, it's this two-sided...
It's the maroon letter right, on his...
You know, but he, at least, I mean, you know, Janik does have a UT next to his degree list of degrees.
Right. You know, John Sharp got his master's degree at Southwestern, which is now Texas State. Brian McCall got his doctorate, who's the chancellor at, what's that system called? Help. McCall.
Texas State?
He's at Texas State. Yeah, I don't know where he got his doctorate from.
I can't remember the name of the system. I suddenly froze on Lamar. but he got his doctorate at UT. So, you know, all of them have, you know, mixed.
Well, and you heard this a lot about, like so in the spring, last spring, Ernest Alistado was nominated for the UT Board of Regents, and some people, particularly from the UT Austin community, since I think they care more about this than the other UT schools, freaked out because he's an Aggie.
Right.
And then he was nominated, and no one's really complained about him since, you know?
You know, it's just they're sensitive with this particular governor about, you know, if you've got maroon underwear, there's something wrong here.
Yeah. Right. But the thing is, I mean, it's also important to realize that just because the governor – might be backing Janik does not mean that Janik has the job. If history, right. you know, is instructive at all, it shows that he might not have the job.
right.
Governor Perry famously, when Cigaroa, the outgoing chancellor, got the gig in 2009, Perry famously backed John Montfort. And that's not an isolated case. In 2013, in December, when they needed an interim president at Texas A&M University, which is supposedly the university that Perry has the most control over,
right.
He wanted Guy Diedrich, who worked for the A&M system office, and the regents, with pressure from Chancellor John Sharp, who famously got his degree, his master's degree from what is now Texas State, I guess.
It's not that famous.
Yeah.
So who would be...
He gave the job went to Mark Hussey, who was he's now the interim president. He was the dean of Agriculture and Life Sciences.
That wheel comes back around because they've got to name a permanent president. I guess they're right. in the middle of a search now.
Right.
Well, if not for Janik, then who would be like the other people in the running or logical choices or possible choices?
Yeah, have any other names come up?
I mean, Montfort's still alive. So that's an option. He wanted them once. He could want them again.
Right.
You know, they really – last time I talked to some people about the search in 2009, it sounds like it really was a pretty exhaustive search, and they landed on Cigaroa as the best choice. You know, it might make sense. You want someone that knows Texas politics. So that makes Janik a decent choice.
Well, the model has been former legislators who mm-hmm. can raise money. So, you know, Montfort was the chancellor at Tech. Kent Hance, who's now the chancellor at Tech, was a congressman and a former state senator. Montfort was a state senator, former DA out in Lubbock County.
Does Janik have fundraising experience?
You know, House member and a senator, so he's got...
Well, all right, right, you know, campaign.
So you start there. So, you know, you've got the ability to pick up the phone and do that sales job. You know, whether he's got the contact list, you know, I guess that would remain to be seen. If UT Nation gets behind whoever the chancellor is, you know, Cigaroa didn't have fundraising experience.
Right, some of the stuff you can learn on the job. And right. And I think ties to the Texas Capitol can probably be overrated. I mean, just given the amount of money that you're going to get from the Texas Capitol relative to other sources of revenue right. in public higher education these days, that's probably not your number one priority all the time, even though people will act like it is.
Right.
But, you know, you need to get federal connections.
And then the other three, I mean, you know, the other three are the same model. You know, Lee Jackson at North Texas and...
Well, they're not all the same model. Renew Couture, Renew like Couture Cigaroa, is right. more like an academic right. from the world of academia.
Right. Strangely, where one of those. Yeah. Yeah.
So who would, if this happened, who would go to HHSC?
That's interesting. Who were the names? I don't remember who the names were when...
I mean, Janik was sort of a surprise. Yeah. You know, I mean, if they chose from the legislature, which, you know, they've done before, it probably wouldn't be a Zerwas because Zerwas has not exactly towed the same Perry line on the Medicaid expansion and on, you know, other issues around the health insurance exchange.
Yeah. we've got a couple of things going on here. You know, we're in the last year of Perry, and you know, we've talked about before this idea of the Perry people are sort of embedding themselves into state government and jobs that they'll have after Perry's gone. And so, you know, does he have somebody in mind for this? You know, I'm going to move this character over here and that character over there. If it's internal, it would probably be, I guess, Chris Traylor is the number two over at HHSC. Be interesting to see how this goes. I do think that if, you know, if Perry's tapping Janik for a job like this, then he's probably got something in mind already for HHSC.
Traylor's probably the right guess.
Right.
But I mean, I think it is important to realize that it's just not a done deal. And it could be anyone. It could be someone from outside Texas, for all we know. Right. Nukator was from outside Texas when she came. So I think that, I think that's that for the Janik situation. There's lots of...
Glad we sorted that out.
I mean, you don't, he's not the
glad
only...
Glad we've got all the answers.
He's not the only higher ed person. We're also waiting to hear on who the Texas Tech University System Chancellor is going to be, since Hance announced that he'll be retiring at the end of the summer.
I guess the two names that float most often over there are Bob Duncan, the state senator from Lubbock, and Rob Janell, the former appropriations chairman who is now, and a former linebacker at Texas Tech, I should point out, who's now a federal judge, are the two names that have come up there.
And do we have any way to handicap that? I've just heard both names.
No. And, you know, I'm not sure that they're at the point where, you know, these are absolutely the only two names. And, you know, I don't know where that Board of Regents
is. Although they've been working on that search longer than UT is. I mean, UT just announced Sigaroa's departure last week.
And did Hance set a backdoor date? This is the date at which I'm going to leave? Or did he just say, I'll stay until you find a chancellor?
No, I think... you know, I'm not sure. I'd have to check on that. But August of this year seems to come to mind for some reason. And he's not going away entirely. He's going to be chancellor emeritus and still has some role in fundraising and keep a townhouse there in Lubbock.
A townhouse in Lubbock.
That sounds Hance-like.
My Lubbock townhouse.
Yeah, that's
it's important.
Name.
Everyone likes to have a little vacation
if
spot.
You're from the panhandle, that sounds sweet.
Any other sort of a ascendant Texas political or policy figures anyone wants to chat about while we have a
no, I mean, you know, we're in early voting, so we're sort of in the suspense mode. The early voting started on Tuesday. We're taping on Wednesday. It goes for a couple of weeks, and then we'll find out on March 4th who all's going to the May 27th primary runoffs.
We've started seeing some folks leaking out or promoting their own internal polls, so there's been a little buzz around that.
You saw that in the AG's race. Dan Branch promoted
his
ahead.
Own internal poll that no surprise here shows him ahead 30%, but still 40% undecided. I mean, I think that's going to be the big challenge for the attorney general's race is,
I think all of these
name
races,
ID, you know, for all of these
maybe
races.
Besides the lieutenant governor's races, you know, a lot of voters are walking into the booths and going, who are these guys?
How many runoffs in the big statewide races are we in for?
I'm going to bet four or five.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet four or five. Not the governor's race, probably in the lieutenant governor's race, probably in the AG's race, probably in controller, not in land. There's only two candidates there. Mm-hmm. And then you'll probably get one in ag and probably get one in railroad commission.
What fun. The election season never ends.
Can you remember an early voting season with this many black boxes still around?
This many black boxes?
Where you can't see the outcome ahead of you?
No, I mean, and I think a lot of this is that the voters don't know these candidates. It's not like you're walking in and voting a straight Democratic or straight Republican ticket. You're walking in and you're looking at, I counted the other day, there are 34 Republicans running in the top seven races. Mm. And it may be that you know all of them. If you live in a particular part of Houston, there's probably a ballot where you actually voted for everybody in the lieutenant governor's race. You know, you voted for Patrick for senator and the other three for their statewide jobs. But in a lot of parts of the state, these guys are unknown names. The AG candidates, Barry Smitherman ran a low ballot statewide race last time, but started this race, he's a railroad commissioner, started this race with about 14% name ID. So the undecideds in that race, whenever the polls have come out, have been in the 50 to 70% range. It's, you know, it's a lot of black boxes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you have any questions or comments.
Or a black box.
Or about how these things are going to turn out, and you don't want any clear answers, email tribcast@texastribune.org. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music, as always. On behalf of Emily, Morgan, Ross, and our producer, Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening. Texas talking about Texas talking, baby.
Texas talking. Sebastian the Crab says that in The Little Mermaid. If you want something done, you have to do it yourself. And then he jumps into the water and Kiss the Girl starts playing.
If you wanna kiss the girl.